welcome to a neuroscience episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by @agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have @PCN_dirt. From popculturenetwork.com.
Yeah, I'm crazy.
Yes, you are.
I don't know. I had the urge to do that for no reason.
And even though he's not here with us tonight, we also normally have @RoddyCat on Twitter. Make sure to follow his news account @NewsNerdsNeed. And of course, make sure to check out theclicknation.com where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account @TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe up to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Circle us on Google Plus. Also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to give us the thumbs up and the 5-star reviews so we can read them on the show. Let's see what else. We have an email account where you can send feedback or anything you want to have read on our show. Send that on to theclicknation@gmail.com. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles, and we will read your tweets live on the air. And there's one thing I'm forgetting that I can't think of. Check out, make sure to go to comicbookroundup.com where you can find some of my comic book reviews being reshared there as well. And we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, even when there's an NFL draft taking place right now. But try not to take my attention away.
Huh.
As Agent 70 displays his said Giants.
Yep. New York Giants, baby. Picking Giants, number 12.
Jersey. Falcons have already picked, so I don't have to really pay too much attention the rest of the night. Except for crazy trades and see where Johnny Manziel gets drafted.
That's right.
And speaking of drafting, we will have our first annual Comic Book Chronicles Comic Book Fantasy Draft later tonight where we will a snake draft and select books from all the big name publishers, and then we'll post the results online so people can take a look at them and vote who did the best job. And we'll let this go for about 6 months and see which host assembles the best ranking yeah. books. And comes out on top.
That's right. Who said the Comic Book Chronicles isn't about a little bit of friendly competition?
So we'll that'll be later on in the show after we do the comic book news, which we'll get to in a second. But first, let's recap everyone's free comic book day weekend. Most notably, Dirt, since you are an employee at a comic book store, how was your... How's your Saturday?
From a retailer perspective, yes.
Well, about a week and a half before before Free Comic Book Day, we thought, hey, maybe we should contact some of these people that we know and see if they can come hang out at the store for Free Comic Book Day. So like Bruce Brown, who we had here on Comic Book Chronicles a couple weeks ago, we got a hold of him. We got a hold of... Mike Atkins, Robert Atkins. Robert Atkins does a bunch of G.I. Joe stuff for IDW. He did the Castle series for Marvel. His brother Mike does a bunch of underground independent stuff. We had another guy here in town, Brett Freeman, who draws and publishes his own, you know, kind of underground comic stuff. So we had all of them come and... you know, they said they do little sketch cards for the kids and sign autographs, whatever. And one of them I think Robert Atkins put together a flyer and sent it to the school district, and every student in every class in the school district got a flyer saying that Free Comic Book Day was happening at our comic book store. We ended up with a line. We opened at 10:30, and we had a line at 9 o'clock in the morning for people wanting to get in.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we had over 1,000 people come through the store that day. We had a place called Why Not Pizza, which is a local pizza place in Chatham, Illinois. They said that they would bring free pizzas. So at noon and 3 o'clock, they did these big pizza drops, and they dropped off, you know, I don't know, a dozen pizzas, and just everybody got some pizza.
Were they just plain, like, pepperoni pizzas?
There was pepperoni, sausage, pepperoni, cheese. I think there was one that was... you know, all vegetables, you know, whatever. And it was really good. It was a really good pizza, by the way.
That's awesome.
You know, we had everything in the store on sale. We took the books. We actually had leftover comics from Halloween Comic Fest, because we've tried doing that the last couple of years, and it just never really took off. So we always had, like, a couple long boxes of stuff left over from Halloween Comic Fest. We had, bins of dollar comics, like old comics that just don't really have a lot of value. So they were just in the dollar bin. We took all of that stuff out, a couple long boxes of that, and we basically mixed the Free Comic Book Day stuff with all the other stuff, and we just did drops throughout the day. So it's, you know, right when we opened, we set a bunch of stuff out on the table, and, of course, people snatch it all up. So then you wait, you know, hour and a half, and you set some more stuff down, and you wait an hour and a half, and you set some more stuff down. So people were able to come in at, you know, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they were still able to get some of the stuff just because we had, you know, spaced it out, and we had that other filler kind of mixed in with it.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, we had people in costume come. We had a guy who made his own Cthulhu costume. So
he had, like,
tentacles on his face and with eyeballs on him. We had a guy dressed as Robin from Batman and Robin, the terrible movie. He had a costume of that.
Oh, no, with the nipples.
We had some lady came dressed as Lady Deadpool. And it was like head to toe spandex Lady Deadpool with the ponytail coming out the back. It looked pretty awesome. Like I said, just over 1,000 people coming through, which we did not expect. And it was one of those things where the writers, the artists, everyone who was there said, this felt like a convention. Like, this felt like a con. And it made us think that maybe next year we might rent actually a bigger like banquet hall or an empty spot in the strip mall or something like that and actually do get more artists and more writers. We had... Zenoscope sent us some books to hand out. BDI, Big Dog Inc., they sent us some comics to hand out. Zenoscope had said that if we had, you know, contacted them with more notice, they actually would have paid airfare to send some people down to have them sign and give away stuff during the day. So we'll
plan on airfare. Where are they located?
Wherever. I mean, Zenoscope, guys who work for Zenoscope work, they live wherever in the United States.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they would just,
they don't have like a base office like Dark Horse is in Portland, right? And
I'm sure they do somewhere, but I mean, as far as who they would fly in to do the show, I don't know. You know, I don't know if they would just fly in from Chicago, St. Louis or, you know, what, but, you know, from here to Chicago, it's like a $99 flight round trip, you know, so it's not anything too incredibly expensive. So, but, you know, it's one of those things where I think next year we probably will, you know, go. We had the news was out here, you know, did a news report. And it's funny because they talked to my boss on camera for like 5 minutes. And then when they edited the package together, they didn't put him in at all. Oh. And we just had
thunder.
Yeah, we had lightning and thunder right outside the window.
Yeah, that's what that sounded like.
Yeah. So if I drop out, that'll be why.
You have a good mic because we could hear that.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, well, I've got a Logitech HD webcam with a built-in microphone, and it does noise filtering and color filtering on it. So hopefully it should look pretty nice on the Hangout. I would hope. But so anyway, Free Comic Book Day was a huge success. Lots of people came through. Lots of kids came through. I think everybody just really enjoyed themselves. We picked up some new customers. We had a couple guys sign up to be subscribers, so that nice. Definitely helps. Yeah. And there were a couple guys who, you know, it's like our store has been in business at our old location. It was there for about 6 years, and for the past maybe four, it had comics. Then we moved to the new location beginning of the year, and there's still people that walk in and say, I had no idea the store was here. So, you know, after so many years, it's finally nice that
You're still there.
Okay. All right.
You're still with us.
Everything kind of flickered and flashed and okay. My screen went black for a minute. That's not a good sign.
Oh yeah, that's not good.
All right. So anyway, Free Comic Book Day was awesome. There you go.
That's pretty cool.
What about you guys? Did you go out and get everything you wanted?
I missed out. You know what? I was going to ask if you had any copies of the Mouse Guard book, the Archaea book, because I missed that. That didn't come to the stupid local. I mean, listen, I shouldn't call it stupid because I didn't want to patronize the store. But the comic book store that's most local to my house just is not that good. And, you know, like living in New York, you get spoiled by having, like, you know, some of the biggest and best comic book stores in Manhattan, like order everything under the sun from Forbidden Planet and St. Mark's and whatchamacallit, and Midtown, of course. And, you know, this shop, you know, which I'm not going to name because I really don't want to belittle them. You know, they're good. They're good for what they do. They do, you know, cater to the needs of the neighborhood and the customers. They, you know, they kind of dabble in other things like video games and skateboards and, you know, stuff like that. But they have plenty of comics and plenty of toys. And I definitely dropped a nice penny on some Captain America Marvel Legend action figures there. So, you know, I made sure to, you know, kind of support the local comic book shop. And I picked up the Marvel and DC book. But what I really wanted was the Mouse Guard, the Archaea one. They didn't have it.
Yeah, that book was actually allocated.
It was hardcover.
Yeah, well, it's a hardcover, and they actually had it printed overseas and shipped in because they needed it so quickly.
Right.
But because of the logistics of having it printed overseas and then shipped back to the United States, they actually had to get in their final numbers of printing before the final numbers actually came through Diamond.
Okay.
And they actually under-ordered or under-printed, I guess. So if you ordered 100, maybe you got 60. Gotcha. You know, it's just one of those things. It's there was no kind of like set determination of how many you were actually getting. And so we only got, I want to say we only got like 32 of them altogether.
And you ordered 60?
And I don't even remember how many we ordered. We ordered a lot, I can tell you that much.
Okay.
I mean, we ordered it in line with the Futures End and.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all that stuff. Because, I mean, it's definitely it's a good book. I mean, that's the book that everybody wants, you know. And, you know, we got 32. So they didn't last long.
Okay.
And then I don't even know if the other stores in town, there are two other comic stores in town, and I'm actually, you know, I'm pretty friendly with them, and I go in there every so often. If we sell something online and in the store at the same time, and it's like we're out of copies, you know, usually I'll run over there and grab one from one of those guys. And, from what I heard, both of those stores were completely out by like noon.
Wow.
They had nothing left at all.
All right.
And we only had stuff because we held it back and, you know, dispersed it throughout the day.
Sure. So, you know, just to wrap up, you know, my Free Comic Book Day experience was okay. Like I said, if I really wanted to get like a real good experience, I would have had to trek into Manhattan. Come on, it's my you know, I want to, you know, patronize the really, the truly local comic shop and, you know, give them some money. So, you know, I stuck with them for a Free Comic Book Day. And with the number 12 pick, the New York Giants draft, wide receiver Odell Beckham. No idea who that is. But welcome to the Giants, Odell Beckham.
Wide receiver from the SEC.
Okay.
Some reason I can't see y'all now. I did something on my laptop, and now, I mean, everything's working fine, but I have no images.
It's probably better that way.
Yeah.
And the one thing that surprised me is that usually every year, or at least the last couple of years after Free Comic Book Day, they have had those Free Comic Book Day books available on Comixology and Comics Plus. And I noticed that this year they weren't available.
Instead, they gave a bunch of Comixology submit stuff free, and a couple of number ones from Image were free.
Right. But yeah, usually they have the DC stuff for free, the Marvel stuff for free. The only way I got a digital copy of DC's Futures End is that they had it available for free on the Amazon bookstore for Kindle. So since I have a Kindle, I could just go in and get it for free, you know, on my Kindle and read it through that way.
Okay.
But you know, usually you go into Comixology the day after, and it's like click, 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 download all these books, and you know, none of them. I don't think I saw any of them on Comixology, and only a couple publishers actually put out their Free Comic Book Days for reviewers, you know, where we could actually get the PDF of them, you know, to read over for review. But
right.
You know, for the most part, those Free Comic Book Day books, they haven't appeared like they usually do, and I was kind of upset because there's a lot of stuff that I did want to read that, you know, we had 1,000 people come through the store. I didn't get to save copies for myself, you know. Yeah.
Did you run out of the Archie Digest? I saw that looked pretty cool.
Yeah, we ran out of everything.
Okay.
I think the only
they had 1,000 people come through. Of course they ran out.
Actually, I take that back. We do have copies of G.I. Joe versus Transformers from IDW.
I know you didn't like that one. I remember you.
That's probably the right sound for that, because a lot of people did pick it up and kind of flip through it and go, never mind, and put it back.
Yikes. Yikes. All right. When you get a chance, Tim.
I was going to say, my store did get the archaic, that Mouse Guard book. I almost got it and then I put it back at the last minute. I think to get one of the Valiant books.
Bad move.
No good.
Yeah, especially since Valiant stuff was free to review anyway. But since I figured since they send me stuff, I try to support them by checking out their books. The store I go to, they had a nice turnout. They had someone dressed in the Amazing Spider-Man movie outfit, and it was free. Pretty detailed superhero outfit. I took like 2 pictures of them.
Nice.
Posted it on my Instagram if anyone wants to go check that out. And yeah, it had a nice crowd. Like, I got there, so they opened at 11. I got there maybe at like 11:15, 11:30. There's a nice little, and it's a little small shop in the downtown area.
Okay.
So it's not that. all the popcorn I was eating while you were talking, along with the trying to get over my cough from last week, it's getting to me. But what was I gonna say? Oh, the store's cramped, so not too much space to stand around in. And besides all that, it's like right after I got there, a huge crowd came in. So it was like this little compact line to get around to the wall that had the free comp stuff. And then once you got there, you could select your stuff and then move over to the side and check out. But I was glad to see they had a nice turnout.
Good.
That was pretty much my day. Actually, I haven't even read everything that I got. And I did make sure to buy something. So I made sure to buy Starlight number 2 from Mark Millar, since on the very back cover, the back page has D-Click Nation 5-star review on it that we gave.
Ooh, all right.
Which I wouldn't get in the other room to show. I showed the screenshot of it when the issue actually came out. So that was my contribution.
All right. That's awesome.
right. So are we ready to talk news?
Yes. Not too much news. Let's see. Brian Bendis and Ed McGuinness are set to reveal Richard Rodder's fate in the Guardians of the Galaxy Original Sin tie-in.
I don't have a sound effect for that because I want to know what happened to Richard Rodder already.
You're gonna find out.
I know, but the way they're
disappointed probably, but you'll find out.
Yeah, the way they're promoting it, it's like, oh yeah, it's something bad. You know, what are you gonna do?
I know everyone's all like excited and whatnot, like people getting their hopes up just to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's probably right. So,
well, what do you think it's gonna be?
He's dead, but you know, in comics, he's not. You know, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
So.
He's gonna. Everyone else is still alive, like Star-Lord and Thanos and whoever else from the Guardians.
They're trying to promote Sam Alexander's Nova, so they're not gonna have another Nova running around, even if it is the Nova that most people know. So you're gonna find a way to.
I like that. It's gonna be one of two things. It's either gonna be he's still secret. He's still really dead. Or he's going to be turned into a villain.
I'm not so keen on turning him into a villain because of the way they developed this character so much in Annihilation and all the other stuff right before they killed him off. That's kind of, you know, that's disappointing.
Okay. Next bit of news. Fox. Well, actually, I guess I could include all these other shows that got announced later in the week, but Fox's DC Comics drama Gotham is officially ordered a series, and you can add Constantine and The Flash and iZombie to that list of shows that got going to be picked up for next season.
Wow. All right.
Star Wars Episode 7's working title reportedly leaked.
I saw this news article kind of flash. What's the reported title?
Let me click on it, and hopefully this link opens in a timely fashion. Someone said that it sounded too much like The Phantom Menace.
Oh,
they're liking the ancient episode 7, The Ancient Fear.
Lord. The Ancient Fear.
I kind of like it. If I can see how it would drum up memories of Phantom Menace, some mystery thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it sets up, you know what it is? It just sets up the mystery to be solved over the next trilogy, so.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
And last bit of news.
Guys, who posted this?
Got it.
Nice.
Lionsgate is set to reboot the Power Rangers in a live-action film.
Wow. Whatchamacallit? Where's William Bruce West when you need him?
Yeah.
William Bruce West. Calling William Bruce West. Power Rangers.
Like how they say it in a live-action movie, like they've had, like there's ever been, like, an animated movie before.
Yeah, right.
All they've had is live-action stuff. So that'd be interesting. And, of course, Lionsgate will try to turn this into a franchise just like everyone else does.
It's not already one. They're just going to turn it into a movie franchise. Yeah. Yep. All right.
Although, here's the question, though. Do you think they're going to go back to the United States' first series of Power Rangers from the early 90s and do the Dragon Zords and the red, black, yellow, pink.
Or to try to green. Americanize it, maybe?
Well, but do that. Like, are they going to do their own version? Like, you know, Michael Bay with Transformers. Do their version of Power Rangers, but going back to that original series from the early 90s.
I guess it depends on who's directing it and shepherding the series. I don't know what to expect. I was a Power Rangers fan growing up, but after a while, I had to stop watching it.
It kind of wears thin after about 2 or 3 years on me. Like I can watch for a while and then I'm kind of done for a while. And then a couple of years go by and I might turn it on, watch for a little bit. Like, oh, look, now they're outer space police. Cool. And then, you know, season or two of that and I'm done for a while, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't take that stuff.
Just with the, anything, it was better in the old days.
I couldn't take
when that. Tommy was just a Green Ranger, maybe the White Ranger. And he wasn't like a tattooed MMA fighter.
Oh, no. That's funny. Power Rangers is a little after my time. But, all right. Speaking of TV, I did not get a chance to watch Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week. I'm going to try to catch up on it tonight or tomorrow, so no spoilers for me. How about the other shows? Are they on this week? Arrow or...
Arrow was live. It was the episode, the
penultimate?
You said. Yeah, the episode before the season finale.
Okay, the penultimate
and
episode.
It's awesome.
All right, good.
So he's ending on a high note.
Good, good, good. All right.
So I guess it's time for us to do our first inaugural Comic Book Chronicles Comic Book Fantasy Draft.
Yeah!
So who's going to type all this up and keep track of it?
Oh, good question. Let me put the popcorn down.
Not it. not it.
I got the soundboard.
I can put in an Evernote list. Or I guess I could also just go back and rewatch.
It's all right.
All right.
We'll
I guess we also need to pick an order.
No, you already did it.
I mean... draft order. Who's picking first and second and third? How do we decide that?
You already typed it out.
You already typed it out.
Not who. Oh, I'm just throwing that together as an example.
Well, the example
is done.
Does anyone have that up that can give it to me?
The email?
Yeah. Someone pull that up so I can.
I think Roddy Cat was in it too. That kind of throws it off.
Well, we'll remove him and the order stays the same. Did I put myself first?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyone pulled up yet? Let me pull up on my phone.
Pulling up the emails.
Oh, wait. Roddy replied, I see.
Oh, he did?
He said, I'm sorry, I'm just seeing this work. It's working. I like this plan. I'm happy to be a part of it. Kind of hard to be a part of it.
Well, I guess he watching. Rod, you're watching. Jump on Twitter. Let us know that you're there.
Yes.
Yeah, we can. I guess we can postpone it for now and do some reviews and come back to it. I don't know. It might be kind of hard.
Where's Roddy on the email?
Yes. Maybe did he reply just to me? Yes, he did.
Oh.
Yeah, he just replied to me. And Dorkeekus is watching.
Yay! Thank you, Dorkeekus.
With a sports reference I don't get.
Nah.
So he says, okay, I nominate LeBron James because he can help Cap and company discover who killed Watu. Look what he did for the Heat. What did he do
That's
for the Heat?
Good.
I don't get it.
That is good. Good job, Dorkeekus. That's an excellent tweet. I just retweeted it. Excellent tweet. That is awesome.
He is a basketball guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Maybe we should plan the draft for after show hours, so to give Roddy a chance to participate.
Not do it live on the air and just come on next week with the list that we made up.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, we could do that.
Since we did kind of just put it all together rather quickly.
Oh, like, yeah.
This will give us a chance to, like, send, like, the whole draft can be done in email form. Back, sure. You know, everyone just email back their picks, or we can try to find a time when everyone's online.
Well, I mean, we could just do, you know, when with the next pick, it's, you know, such and such. But everyone's got to remember to click reply all. Yeah. because I think there was a couple instances in our email.
Yeah, I did that today.
I forgot to click reply all. I was like, whoops.
I mean, it happens.
Yep. All
right, so we'll do that off the air later then, and we will...
We'll announce the results next week.
Yes.
So I'll make sure to wait to post it all on the next week's post.
Right, and that'll be interesting, and give us some time to really think about, you know, and look at these rankings, and think a little bit harder about our picks.
So see, it's tease for next week. So
yeah, definitely.
We're to bring you back for more.
That's right.
So sorry to those that were looking forward to seeing it tonight.
We reconsidered. We want to keep Roddy Cat, you know, in the loop and not have him like kind of have it's too bad we don't have auto pick for him, right?
Yeah. That's another sports reference.
Yeah, that's a fantasy fantasy sports reference.
Oh, okay, thanks.
All right. So let's get to these books. Because I
want to propose one first.
Let's throw out something.
Should we since we were talking about it earlier, let's start with Futures End number one. I think everyone read that.
Yeah. Alrighty.
I enjoyed the heck out of this.
I was surprised. I couldn't tell if you were being facetious or not.
No, I was dead serious. I love this story. And I will admit I am a sucker for apocalyptic, universe shattering type stories. And the fact that it is 5 years in the future, so you do get glimpses of, you know, things going forward in the DC universe, which I enjoyed. Plus, they killed Stormwatch, like all of Stormwatch.
Yeah,
like, the entire Stormwatch is blown up. So I was like clapping out loud for that one.
That kind of took me aback because I was like, so what do they have against Stormwatch? It was just like, boom.
Well, I'm sure.
Where's the damn bell? There you go.
The only one that technically, you know, died is the Superman guy. Right. So he's the only one that you really see shattered into a skeleton of energy. The rest of them are on the ship, and the ship blows up. But there's always they got into an escape pod, or they reinforce the bridge so it's floating without air, out in space until they can survive through whatever. There are ways to get around the rest of them being dead, but as far as Apollo, he is gone.
Hmm.
I also want to say that for the first time ever in the history of comics, I actually like Grifter now.
I like Grifter too. I'm glad he's getting some shine.
Yeah, I never cared for him before this, but his role in this story and what he's doing is I loved every second of it.
I was just kind of glad that he had a gun that looked like a gun again. I remember when it was in the early 90s, they switched him from like guns that looked like guns to blasters that looked like nothing like you would ever shoot out of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice to see him with like an actual weapon again. I like that I like that little shine that he got right there. I did like that. You know, as I said before, I was taken aback by just the absolute murking. They just wiped out Stormwatch. You know, it was a complete wipeout of the team. Or at least, you know, like you said, or at least of Apollo. The fact that the story is kind of based around, well, at least the current DC part of the story is based around Firestorm was, you know, I'm not familiar with the current dynamic of Firestorm. I don't know who the characters are, the two people that combined to become Firestorm. Right. So that took a little getting used to.
Well, part of the problem with Firestorm is that when it started in the New 52, Gail Simone was the writer,
right.
And so she tried to put in all sorts of, like, forced social commentary, and nobody cared, nobody bought it, and so, okay. Like, after six issues or whatever, they replaced her, and then after they replaced her, I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting. Then it got kind of good, but by then, everybody had jumped off of it, and so it got canceled.
Oh.
You know? So, but basically the dynamic is you've got the jock, who is the body of Firestorm, and then you've got the geek, who is the mind of Firestorm. And they merge together in order to create the Firestorm body. And you actually find out it's part of an experiment, and there were other Firestorms in other countries that were part of whatever experiment that they were doing.
Okay.
Almost like a Cold War type thing.
Okay.
This experiment was, other people stole the information and made their own variants, whatever.
Gotcha.
But as far as the this story goes, they wanted to do something to make you feel something about Firestorm again, you know, because nobody, he hasn't had a book in a while, nobody really cares. So right. They actually made him, the fighting between the two characters in the dynamic of Firestorm actually leads to the death of another character in the DC Universe, which I guess maybe we shouldn't name because the book just came out yesterday. I won't say who it is, but they actually show this character dead on the last page, and he is dead. Like, he's not like, oh,
he
it's
has
a body
run through now. More than once, basically.
Yeah, it's not a body unmoving on the floor. Like, this is a guy impaled. So you know that he's done for.
Right. Oh, and by the way, we did neglect to mention that the book starts with a familiar future figure from, you know, that's someone that should be familiar to fans of the DC animated universe.
Which, speaking of Free Comic Book Day, if you got the Zero issue on Free Comic Book Day, you find out that Batman Beyond from the DC animated universe is technically now part of the actual future of the New 52.
Right.
And in his world, Mr. Terrific has created the Brother Eye satellite, which...
as opposed to Batman doing it.
Yeah, in the old 52, it was Batman. And it comes to life, and it creates, in the old 52, I guess you'd call it.
The old 52? You mean post-crisis?
Pre-flashpoint post-crisis? Oh,
yes. Exactly what it is. Oh, my God.
But in that version, you know, Batman created the Brother Eye to keep track of the superheroes on Earth, so if anything ever happened, he would know how to take them down.
Right.
The Brother Eye becomes sentient and decides to attack
Skynet.
Because these superheroes, you can't control them, right? So in this version, apparently Mr. Terrific creates it. It goes crazy.
Oh, seriously? Just like in Terminator, you know, there's got to be a really smart black guy that helps create. Really? Wow.
So anyway, Bruce Wayne was supposed to be the one to go back in time to stop it. But he gets injured in the Free Comic Book Day.
All about the Terminator.
So Batman Beyond is the one who actually travels back in time, but because his body mass is different from Bruce Wayne, the calculations are off, and he ends up 5 years in the future instead of in the present day. So,
and he still can't find Sarah Connor. But it's okay.
Well, I mean, you could grab the phone book and just get the list. All of them. But that usually doesn't work out that well. But, you know, I have to say, I really enjoyed this. I might be a little biased because I did get to talk to Dan Jurgens and Brian Azzarello about it, right. You know. So maybe that does help my excitement for it. But I love these types of stories. I love time travel. I love end of the world apocalypses. You know, I love when they take C-grade superhero teams and blow up their ship in the middle of outer space. So I was pretty happy with the series overall. Yeah.
Well, this particular issue, I thought that the issue was well paced. Mm. I thought it was very well paced. I thought that the snippets of these individual stories were very well paced, and you know, left you wanting more. And I think that's a great way to start off a limited series like this.
What about Tim?
I like time travel stories, so that's entertaining to me. I like Grifter being involved, even though he killed a family.
Hmm.
But they weren't a regular family.
That's right.
This is true.
That's the whole point.
What else did I like? Art was good enough. The writing ensemble that they've got together seemed to know what they were doing.
Well, that was one thing that when we talked to Juergens and Azzarello, we were talking about the fact, like, how do you collaborate, you know, with, you have all these different guys writing all these different sections. And basically what it is that they start out with each writer or each team working on a particular set of characters. So, like, one guy is doing the Grifter part, and one guy is doing the Batman Beyond part, and one guy is doing the Firestorm part. And then they just kind of, they say, okay, we have this many pages, and they kind of barter back and forth on how many pages they're going to get within the book to tell their part of the story. And it's like, okay, well, I'll give you two more pages in this issue, but I want two more pages in the next issue, you know, kind of going back and forth. And then as the characters intertwine, then they kind of hand it off to the other person, or they pick up other characters as they're going along. So kind of like what with Agent 70, what he was saying is that it, each segment feels like it's running at that same pace. So it's like you never feel like one part is stalling.
Right.
And then it picks up again with the next part. It's like they these are their pages that they have to work with in the issue to get their point across. So they're hammering it home as best they can within that time period.
And like I think they did a very good job.
Yeah, there's no filler. There's no fluff. There's not two pages of conversation in a restaurant while they're waiting for dinner. You know, none of that type of stuff.
It sounds confusing if they're trading pages.
Well, I mean, you know, that, I think it's a little easier to coordinate now. They're probably like Skyping or chatting or doing a Google Hangout like us, you know, and, you know, maybe having like, you know, quick conference calls to make sure that they're all on the same page. So it's probably a little easier to coordinate that way.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're all editing the same Microsoft Word document in the cloud or something. So, all right, cool.
Yeah. So far we're in, I think, let's see, what did I write down? For my notes, I said I think I enjoy keeping up with this weekly series. So many heroes involved, plus Grifter. So there you go.
All right.
All righty, cool. All right. What else did everyone read? Did everyone read Original Sin number one?
Yes.
I kind of skimmed through it. I didn't give it a whole lot of attention.
All right. Well. Speaking of summertime event, you know, or springtime slash summertime events, this is Marvel's event, Original Sin, and I like this. I thought it was well done. I thought that the mystery murder element is, you know, I thought, you know, was pretty engaging. I thought that Jason Aaron did a good job kind of setting up the premise and setting up a ragtag bunch of investigators who are hot on the trail of, you know, following leads into the murder of Uatu the Watcher, if you hadn't figured out yet, who's actually dead. They've been kind of promoting it with the freaking eyeballs. Did you get rid of all the bouncy eyeballs? Have those come out yet, Dirt?
Yeah, well, we got one box this week, or okay. One bag this week, but then we got three more bags coming next week.
Okay. Did you get rid of all the bouncy eyeballs already? Mm. There you go. So, you know, that's going to be, you know, that'll be fun to see kind of bouncing around in your store.
Kind of gross.
Kind of. But, I think he's going to get one. I think he's going to get one.
And I still can't see anything on my screen.
Maybe you're lucky.
I'm just hoping the actual, when it's up on YouTube.
Oh, we got him!
I'm missing the truth.
Now. Oh, Jim is missing it. Oh.
I don't know what's going on. I just have black boxes. Y'all are.
That's funny. That's awesome.
I enjoyed the art and the writing in the Original Sin number one. Colors by Jace, was it Ponsor?
Mm-hmm.
Ponsor were nice. I said it was kind of convenient that Nick Fury just happened to be having steak dinner with the Avengers when this happened, and so he gets sucked into this.
What else is he doing? You know, he's already...
He's in hiding like he's been the last 6 months. Isn't he always
in hiding and storing weapons in some cache somewhere?
Does he need to be hiding if he's having dinner with Cap, Wolverine, and Black Widow? Really? You know what I mean?
He's been in hiding since the end of Age of Ultron.
Right? Oh, yeah, Age of Ultron. That's right.
Well, you know, you're not exactly keeping a low profile when you've got the jet parked out in the parking lot.
Yeah, twin jet in the parking lot.
I think he doesn't necessarily have to keep the lowest profile now that it's, you know, like kind of, you know, like the whole Avengers world storyline has started to, you know, take shape and the Avengers, you know, have this like really big presence. So it probably is a different climate for Nick Fury Sr. So, you know, ultimately he's got, you know, he can afford to step out and, you know, have a steak dinner every once in a while. But like I said, I think he's pretty safe with those three hanging out with him.
Now there's mystery people and shadowy figures.
Yeah. To be revealed. Mystery boss one and these people who have one of Uatu's eyeballs. Kind of wacky.
Although, do we know for sure that is Uatu? Because don't all the Watchers look the same?
They look similar. I think Uatu is the one that hung out in the blue area of the moon, though. I think other Watchers had their own stations.
Well, yeah,
so I think that's why.
Couldn't the big twist be that this was actually a different Watcher that came to visit, and then Uatu murdered him and made everybody think that he was dead or something?
You know? Listen, I wouldn't be surprised. That's not a bad idea.
Uatu turned heel and dropped the leg on Macho Man, and now he's following Uatu.
Too busy laughing. That's funny.
According to Dork Geekus, Fury's been sitting around watching Game of Thrones
and
Breaking Bad during his free time. He's got to catch up on that TV.
That's right, he's binge watching. And he's you know what? He's probably catching up on 24 just so that he can watch the new 24. Shout out to Classic Materia, the return of Classic Materia.
Which I haven't seen yet, so I can't read what he posted because I haven't watched it yet.
Or listen to his podcast.
His podcast. That's right. Right, yeah.
Yeah, stick in this.
Yeah, shout out to the Cult Slither coming back. Cult Slither podcast and the 24 podcast. Another 24. I think that's what he called it.
24. Yeah, he spelled the incorrect spelling.
That's right. Shout out to Class.
Did any of y'all happen to catch the Bleeding Cool theory of what's going to happen?
I did not, so let me put up spoiler alert.
Y'all care to hear it? Sure, go ahead. They said it was just a shot in the dark, and they don't really know anything, but just trying to read tea leaves. You know, everyone's assuming that it's going to end with Nick Fury being killed.
Boo!
But I actually like their theory of Nick Fury becoming the Watcher of the Marvel Universe.
I think I did read something about that. I mean, he's already watching everybody anyway, just not with any kind of powers.
Yeah, right. And, you know, he's already, you know, a guy with the missing eye patch, you know, or missing eye and the eye patch. It'd be a nice way of transitioning him to another
role
out of the way of Black Nick Fury.
His son, Fury Jr.
A.K.A. his son.
Right.
Dork Geekus wants you to remember that Dr. Doom killed an alternate Watcher in Millar's FF run.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Since I don't read. Wait. In Millar's FF run. Was that Ultimate
FF? No, when Millar did it with Hitch, I think, right?
The Living Tribunal told Doom in Fraction's FF run that the Watchers are under his protection, says Dork Geekus. So I guess the Living Tribunal is going to be getting involved in this storyline.
Ooh, interesting.
All that stuff went over my head. Anything involving FF and
cosmic,
that stuff, yeah.
Cosmic universe, I got you. All were you.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Next up, who's got a book to nominate?
Oh, boy. How about let's talk about the shame that is Batwing these days. That reminds me, I'm not pulling up covers.
Yeah, get put them up. You know, I can't see them.
The people at home can see them, and they're the ones who matter, Tim. It's not all about you.
We've got two viewers.
Do we really?
That's what the thing at the bottom of the screen says. By Dork Geekus and Roddy Cat, hopefully.
All right, so for Batwing is a book that kind of struggled for a while. The first incarnation of the character for the first year or two was a guy in Africa fighting against tribal drug lords and you know whatever, and it was interesting. It was actually pretty good, but it didn't really resonate with people, and so they ended up switching gears with the series and making it Luke Fox, Lucius Fox's son. He's an MMA fighter. He's trained in combat, and so Batman decides to take him under his wing, so to speak, and makes him Batwing. And the story, Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray, they just seem to have this hard time trying to figure out what to do with the character. About all they can really do is put his family in danger and then have him react and try to save them. And that's really all that it's been so far. And this latest incarnation, or this latest storyline, has him going down into the Gotham Underground, which is that terrible, terrible storyline that came up in Catwoman, I don't know, about half a year ago. It's basically this like civilization that lives in the sewers underneath Gotham, and they've built their own like buildings underground, and they have their own social hierarchy, and it's always us versus them up top. And the whole Joker's daughter thing, if you read any of those terrible comics, she comes from the whole Gotham Underground world.
May.
And I don't know if they actually thought Gotham Underground was a good idea, or if they just thought, hey, maybe we can try to do something with it so it's not that terrible. But I'm sorry, they didn't pull it off. He finds an old friend of his from school who went mad and made himself into a villain, and now he's got to take down this guy that he knew years ago, and he's fighting against all these crazies underground, and he's trying to find his sister who's been kidnapped. And I've been reading this book since issue one of the New 52. I'm one of the three people in the Northern Hemisphere who actually read that way.
And jumped on when the new creative team took over.
Yeah, and I'm ready to drop it at this point. If they can't tie up the story, if issue 32 is not the end of this particular storyline, I'm probably going to stop reading Batwing for a while.
I stopped reading Batwing a long time ago.
Well, so did everybody else.
Jeez.
Yeah. But it's part of the Bat family, so it'll stay.
We'll see.
Yeah,
I don't think anything's guaranteed nowadays.
This is true.
All right, what's next?
Let's see. How was Nailbinder?
Very good.
The art I only looked at the first page so far.
I'm contemplating that as pick of the week, click of the week.
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, so basically, Nailbiter, the title comes from this serial killer that the cop tracked down, who basically, if he sees someone who is a nail biter biting their fingernails, he kills them and chews their fingers off. That's like his bizarre, quirk, whatever. Turns out he's from this small town. It's Buckaroo, Oregon. And as it turns out, he's not the only serial killer that's come from this town. There have been several others that have come from this small town. So this cop is definitely thinking, like, obviously there must be something about this town that's turning people crazy. And he's supposed to meet an old friend of his who's been doing some investigations in this town. But, of course, when he gets there, I'm trying to remember if his friend is murdered or he's just disappeared or what the deal is, but suddenly he finds himself kind of alone in this isolated little town out in the middle of nowhere where all these serial killers happen to come from, and he's got to basically try to figure out what's going on. Like, why is this town cursed? Is it that there's some sort of cult? Is it just that everybody's crazy? There's lead in the water and they're all off their meds, or, what the deal is. And the story, me trying to explain the story as best I can, doesn't really work, because the story is it's told through the eyes of the cops, so he doesn't really know everything, and he makes assumptions. So he's the unreliable narrator.
Okay.
So you don't really know if what he's saying is really actually, you know, what the truth is, or if that's just what he thinks it is, type of thing. But the atmosphere of the book is what's spot on. Like the coloring, the artwork, the mood, the dialogue, like everything just feels like everything feels wrong. Everything feels off kilter. And the first opening pages are when they go and they find the nail biter, and they're apprehending him, and it immediately cuts to this cop sitting on a bed thinking about that case, and he's getting ready to commit suicide, and he stops because he gets a call from his friend. So it's like the whole, it's like it's very dark, it's very tense, and it's also one of those things where you know. It's with horror comics, a lot of times with horror comics, they try to do gore and blood for the sake of it being bloody and gory, like Avatar stuff with Crossed and all that kind of stuff. They want to show people getting eviscerated and getting decapitated. And that only goes so far when you're doing a comic book, because obviously you're looking at somebody's drawings, whereas this relies on that real, that feeling in the pit of your stomach type of horror where you actually you start to feel bad for the characters who are in the middle of this situation. So I really enjoyed this book. I thought this was, you know, 5 stars. I can't wait for the series. Yeah, this is fantastic.
Yeah, I hate to tell you, based on the cover, this is just not something I would have picked up off the rack. Seriously, this is not something I would have picked up off the rack.
You know, the one thing
I would for Josh Williamson, because I like him.
If you remember, you know, some of the scarier episodes of The X-Files, like when it did kind of take itself seriously for a while, and it was really moody and atmospheric, or even they did a second show. Chris Carter did another show called Millennium that was much darker, much scarier. It was about a guy in the FBI tracking serial killers and that kind of stuff. Like, this fits in with that mode. Like, you definitely get done with it, and it just kind of sticks in your mind, you know, of what's going on in this book. So I definitely loved it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to reading it.
All right. Let me see if I can throw out something here. What else did other people read? How about Cyclops number 1?
That was what I was about to bring up next.
Yeah.
I think that might be my pick of my click of the week.
Really? Cyclops number 1?
Yes, I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, just very quickly, if you didn't realize by now, young Cyclops is in the present time. And, you know, he's surprised to find out, you know, and during the Trial of Jean Grey crossover that lo and behold, his father, Christopher Summers, is alive, and he's a space pirate in space leading the Starjammers. So he basically takes some time off from the X-Men to hang out with his pops, and it's actually kind of cool. You know, I thought they definitely told both sides of the awkwardness. You know, the story described the awkward situation from both perspectives, both from Corsairs, that's Christopher Summers, his perspective, and from Scott Summers' perspective. So I thought that Rucka did a good job with that. I thought that they definitely played the other Starjammers up, and I'm glad to see them get some shine. You know, take it from a longtime X-Men fan, I'm happy to see the Starjammers, you know, get a little bit of the spotlight. So it was pretty cool to see Chode and Raza and Lady.
I forgot they had the Shi'ar guy Corvus.
Yes, yes, it was nice to see him too. Like after after all that time that the other like that one group of X-Men were in space, like Rachel and Havoc and that whole group. So it was nice to see Corvus make an appearance.
The only thing I didn't like is, not to spoil too much, but at the end, Corsair and Havoc go off on their own, have their own adventures. I kind of want them to stick around with the Starjammers.
Right. I mean, we don't know how long the series is going to last, so you figure, yeah, this is probably the means to get them kind of doing, you know, a father-son trip, you know, like kind of doing some real bonding and real interaction without the the Starjammers providing, like, foil. So, you know, you figure this is probably part of the you know, the main cogs of the story, you know, kind of moving things forward, you know, between the two of them. So
Dorkika says that the interaction between Gene and Old Scott was creepy. Kitty scolding him made it extra icky.
Yeah. That was from, was that last week's book?
Yeah. Well, yeah, last week's.
Oh, yeah, good. That was one of last week's books. Yeah, that was kind of, yeah. Thanks for reminding us.
Okay, so here's my question. I'm looking at this cover. Why is What's-His-Face from Starjammers wearing the funky red armor from Bram Stoker's Dracula? Like, he's wearing that plastic ribbed armor. Like, he's wearing this funky... For her pleasure, it's got all this texture on it and everything. I thought he always just wore like a red tunic, like he had a red pirate shirt.
Yeah, he usually does. That's just artistic license. It's got to be artistic license. To me, it looks too much like the Green Lantern costume in the Green Lantern movie.
Well, I mean, if you're going to aim, you aim for the top, right?
Nah!
But, Russell Dauterman definitely is an artist I think folks will need to pay attention to and look out for bigger stuff in the future. He looks like he could be, like, one of the young guns, quote-unquote, for Marvel.
Right, and this is definitely a good stage for him to show off his skill.
I got put up there with, at least for now, even though I'm just going off the first issue, but I have to start putting up there perhaps with, like, All New X-Men and All New X-Factor as, like, X-books I must read every month.
Interesting.
You know, I haven't read All New X-Factor just yet, but...
Interesting, okay.
It'd be like that sometimes.
All right.
So we go ahead and get Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, out the way?
We all read that?
Yeah, I read that.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, are we going to spoil the ending?
Should we?
Let's not.
Yeah, that's
fine. we can say if we're happy or pleased with it.
I'm not surprised by it because they definitely foreshadowed it in the last issue of Ultimate Spider-Man.
I don't think that it's legitimate.
I don't.
Because here's the thing. I think it's too coincidental that Norman Osborn escapes and then you have that reveal on the last page. Like, I think the two are somehow connected.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Plus whoever those twin villains were.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is the beginning of the Ultimate Clone Saga.
Oh, you had to go there. That's what I mean,
that's exactly what it seems to be pointing towards.
I was absolutely avoiding saying that, but goodness
gracious. Well, I'll say it for you. Clone Saga.
Gosh. Oh. Ooh. Bendis, how could you?
Although, I don't understand. There's the whole thing where he's talking to Genki. I guess that's how you pronounce that dude's name. And they're talking about how he wants to tell some girl that he likes her, but Miles is like, no, she's out of your league. You'll never. And it's like in the last issue that they did, he just he got a kiss.
It's a Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, and they had a little fling going. So what happened? Yeah. What happened with their fling? And if a girl's out of his league, if he can get Gwen Stacy, that's not really out of. Yeah. I don't think there's really a whole lot of people out of his league.
Yeah, seriously. You go on, Asian brother. You go on. With your Legos. But yeah, no, that I was kind of confused by that. I'm like, wait, are we in Future's End already? Are we 5 years later? What the hell? You know?
Well, no, it's supposedly taking, you know, right off the heels of the attack by Galactus.
Is it? It seems like they moved a little bit forward.
Well, maybe like a few months, but yeah. It doesn't seem like it's not like 5 years in the future.
Right, 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 right. All right.
Nothing so crazy like 5 years in the future.
Yeah, nothing crazy like that. But no, but in all seriousness, you know, the book was okay. The last page reveal cliffhanger that we won't spoil was kind of like, yeah, okay, I saw it coming. So I'm kind of curious to read issue number two. But overall, I was kind of disappointed in the issue. I want to see where it goes, though, because I'm a fan of the character. So, you know, they got me hooked in terms of that. So
I guess one of the problems is I really like the character, so I don't want to see his life get turned upside down. But at the same time, by not doing any big change or any big thing, it's like it feels like you're reading the same book month after month after month. I mean, it really is him talking about girls. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the bulk. He talks about girls until a villain shows up and he's got to do something about it.
All right. Well, he's also got, you know, the whole parenting thing too. So it's kind of, you know, that's an unresolved storyline that is probably going to be interesting to see, you know, develop and play out. It's kind of interesting to see him minus any sort of Aunt May figure.
Dort Geekus says they already had the ultimate clone saga with Spider-Woman, Scorpion, and Tarantula, etc.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That doesn't count. If it happens with chicks, it's not the same as if it happens with dudes.
this is a new volume that didn't happen before.
Oh no, it had to happen before, but yeah.
This is all new Ultimate now.
Yes. No.
Now. Oh my goodness. Alrighty. Alright, so we got that out of the way. What else? Anything else?
Anyone read Batman Eternal?
I did read Batman Eternal.
I am behind.
I did read Batman Eternal. It's okay. This one is of the first five issues, this is the one that's probably the hardest to just pick up on its own and read.
This one has starred Red Robin, right?
Yeah, he plays a prominent role. There's a prominent role for... Where is the sound effect?
Sorry.
No, it's me. Spoiler.
But you heard me rustling my...
Oh, no, we did hear that, but who cares? You know, we heard thunder before. What's the big deal?
This is true.
Seriously. I was just looking for the bell for the spoiler alert because there is, you know, more spoiler! DC, ha-ha, pun intended. In this issue, so you know, Stephanie Brown is running around. You know, Harper Row is in there too, and there's all sorts of all sorts of stuff. Like I said, this is probably the least friendly, least new reader friendly of the Batman Eternal book so far, because I think they're presuming that you jumped on board by issue five. You know, they are 5 weeks into it, so they can sort of, you know. They don't have to necessarily set up anything at this point. I think the setup was done in the first four issues.
I love Stephanie Brown, and I'm excited that she's back, but any book that has Harper Row just makes me not want to read it.
Yeah, she's in there. She's in there.
I like how – I know they made mention of how they were going to play her name – make her name mean something. And I guess I see how they're going to do it relating to her father, so that's kind of cool. And what his name is.
Yeah.
Okay.
For a spoiler, I mean. Not that a chick.
Harper Row. Not Harper Row? I was like, okay, Harper Row? Well, I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying I'm jumping
back to spoiler.
Oh, okay. I was like, what is he talking about?
Cliff knows a lot more about the DC universe than I thought.
Yeah, I'm like, what? All right, let me throw out something else. I enjoyed, and this is actually close to my click of the week. I'm still sort of debating. I read Iron Fist, The Living Weapon number 2, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. There's just some fun stuff. Kari Andrews is having a blast doing this. You know, the art is dynamic. The writing is okay, but I think the story itself kind of, you know, overshadows any kind of weakness that might be in some of like the dialogue and some of the interplay between characters. I had a lot of fun reading this, and I had a lot of fun reading a lot of books this week, which is definitely a plus. So it makes it very hard to choose a click of the week. But I definitely will recommend this book. You know, you don't have to be, you know, the biggest Marvel aficionado. You don't have to be a kung fu person. This is just a fun book to read. The art is really nice, and it's just dynamic.
Does he really fight a dragon in this book?
No, but if you're familiar with the Iron Fist mythology and the origin, you recognize at least one rendition of Shu Lao, the Undying, as the dragon that's on the cover.
Yeah, so, but I wanted to see him punch a dragon.
Well, listen, I don't think you'll be disappointed if you pick up this issue. It's still new reader friendly because it's only the second issue. I don't think you really needed to read the first issue, but it does help. It does sort of help that, you know, I'm a fan of the Fraction Iron Fist series that developed a lot of the supporting cast around Iron Fist and some of the mythology surrounding Kun Lun. So, all this stuff was coming back to me in like waves as I was reading it. So that was kind of cool, you know, kind of waxing nostalgic about it. Makes me want to pick it up again and you know, dig into the long boxes and read it. Like I said, it's fun. It's, you know, it's fast paced and, it's something that I would recommend to someone just, you know, picking up a book, say, hey, you know what? You don't have to read, you know, like, you know, the classic superhero book. Try this one.
Let's jump down to X Factor.
All right, I read that too.
Yeah, well, I know you read it, and so that's why I want to bring this up, because Dork Geek has just tweeted, all new X Factor would have had a bigger punch if the solicits didn't give away the twist.
Oh, I didn't read the solicits, so I didn't, I definitely got the twist, and I definitely got, you know, I felt the impact of it. So, maybe it's a good thing I didn't read the solicits that closely.
Let me see if I can find
The only early solicits I knew was the final team roster. If anything else has been announced, I don't know anything about it.
Well, here, hold up a second. I'm loading up the solicit now. One of the country's most outspoken anti-mutant leaders has a mutant daughter. It's up to X-Factor to rescue this young girl from her father. Serval Industries brings you the heroes you need in any situation.
I have no idea who that's referring to.
Well, read the book. This is actually a pretty good issue. I like this issue. It's kind of a new starting jumping off point, so it is very new reader friendly.
Because six issues makes the trade, so 1 through 6 is the first trade, and this is the first chapter of the next trade.
Exactly. So, I give Peter David a lot of credit. The art was actually pretty good. I like the makeup of this team. It's actually growing on me. You know, I like the team dynamic. I like the way Peter David's kind of developing some of the characters, especially Warlock and Danger. You know, the sentient robot and the alien who's, you know, kind of robotic. A technomorph, yeah, I think is the old school technical term for him.
But yeah, I'm enjoying the book. Since it's off in the fringes of the X world and not really involved, so to speak. Right. And I'm enjoying how you say the artist's name, Carmine Gian something.
D. Giancomenko. Giancomenko. He's a paisan.
Dort Gika says it pertains to the daughter because the story doesn't mention that until the very end.
Right.
So this, I guess the twist that she's the daughter of whoever, like it says it right there in the listing for the book. Like that's what issue 7 is about, but I guess the story doesn't actually address that until right at the very end.
Right. Right, right, right.
It definitely that was an editorial gaffe on that one.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I would say that, you know, I guess I did benefit from not reading the solicitation that closely.
Or you read it when they announced it 2 months ago, but then time
and forgot. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Shout out to short-term memory loss.
Wait, who? Another really good book this week that I highly recommend is the latest issue of Alex and Ada came out. This is the story of the guy who gets a android as a gift, and he unlocks her mind so that she actually becomes sentient and is able to have emotions and feelings and make her own decisions and explore the world around her. And this is the first issue where now that she's unlocked and now that she's quote-unquote thinking and alive, they go back to his house and she's exploring the world for the first time. So she's an adult who's grown up and has, you know, knowledge and understanding. Or I guess she has knowledge, but she doesn't have wisdom.
Right.
So she knows what everything is, but she doesn't really know how things are.
No understanding.
Right. Yeah, so this is a whole issue of her tasting things and sniffing things and feeling things. And while she's kind of exploring and playing and you know, having this good time, he's kind of freaking out now thinking about what he's actually done, because it's illegal for you to unlock your android and bring him to life like that. And so now he's starting to kind of freak out a little bit, like, what have I done and how do I keep this quiet and how do we make sure that nobody ever figures this out and all of that stuff. And at the same time, she just wants to go out and explore the world and experience everything. So it's adding a, you know, that dynamic that you have where she wants to go out and be crazy and he's got to, you know, keep from the government coming and killing him, you know. So I enjoyed this book. I love Alex and Ada every month. The story is good. The artwork is fantastic. And I always look forward to the new issue.
All right, cool.
What about The Woods, number one, from Boom Studios?
Oh, yeah.
I did not read this, but I saw that you guys did. So go ahead.
Yeah, Dirt and myself both enjoyed it. It's from James Tynion IV from DC and Batman, Family of Books fame. It involves a high school that's teleported to some other planet or dimension, and a group of the student body get together, about five students, and they decide to go off and leave the school and venture out into the woods to see what, hopefully find a way back home.
Well, and one of the kids notices there's this, like, once they get transported to this alien land, there's some sort of like spire or pyramid or something that's outside the school grounds right on the edge there. And he goes and takes a look at it, and you kind of have that Arthur C. Clarke moment, you know, where like in 2001, they see this monolith and they know that this is something trying to communicate with them. He sees this spire and he understands like this is some sort of alien mind, alien technology, alien civilization trying to contact them, trying to communicate something. He just doesn't know what, he doesn't know why, he doesn't know how it's supposed to work, but he just knows that it's pointing in the direction of the woods. So they're going to have to go into the woods and explore and figure out what exactly is going on. But of course, the kids are in the school and like these strange creatures are smashing through the windows and eating people, and other students are freaking out and starting to go insane. And so it's kind of like part Stephen King's The Mist, part The Lost, part 2001 Space Odyssey. I don't know. It's this really weird mix of stuff. And it's also kind of vaguely, I don't know if you'd say inspired by is the nice way to say it, but there was actually a manga series called The Drifting Classroom about a kid who goes to school and his school, everything shakes and suddenly their school is transported to this like post-apocalyptic environment. There's nothing but desert surrounding them. You know, but there are differences. A lot of people online have been saying that this is, you know, basically ripping off that manga. But it feels more like he read that and he kind of took the setup, but then went out on his own storyline. You know, once he, once he got the characters kind of out of that framework, because there's a lot of stuff in this first issue that really has nothing to do with the Drifting Classroom. And Drifting Classroom was about little kids, third graders, fourth graders, in this post-apocalyptic world, whereas these are high school kids. So for all intents and purposes, they're just, you know, adults going out and doing this stuff. So it is different if people are saying that. You know, I can see where they get the idea of the inspiration, you know, being used as a jumping off point. But I think what he's doing here in the woods has enough of his own flavor and is taking enough of a turn away that it's actually, you know, going into his own original work here. So,
yeah, so it's not completely derivative.
Okay. Right. Cool. And I thought it was really good too.
Awesome. I'm going to definitely check this out when I have a chance this weekend. So awesome. Awesome.
Oh, and breaking news.
Uh-oh.
ABC has picked up the Goldbergs for a second season.
Oh,
I love that show. No.
What is that?
From that. That is what the best show on TV. Oh. That's the show. It's set in,
I would not like you at all.
It's set in 1980 something. It's just like this random kid remembering his life in the 80s and talking about everything that happened to him and his family. And I'm at the age now where it's like I identify with the kid because I remember everything that he's talking about. I remember doing. But at the same time, now that I'm an adult with kids, like I identify with the parents and the way they freak out around their kids.
Mm.
So picked up for second season. I love it.
Funny. Eclectic, wherever you are, you're not happy.
All right. So anyway, back to comics.
That's funny.
So yeah, The Woods was going to be my click of the week until I read Cyclops. And then I switched.
All right, cool. All right, what do we got next? How about I throw out, are we to the point where we're just going to throw out like a bunch of books real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, so let me throw out real quick. I enjoyed reading Moon Knight number 3, believe it or not. I like the fact that this book is kind of alternating stories. They're one and done. It's issue number 3, and you know, Warren Ellis has definitely gone. You know, I at some point he's going to explain why we're seeing Moon Knight kind of adopting different, costumes or images. He addresses it specifically in this issue, but it was kind of if anyone recalls or wants to pull up the recording of the episode where I did a quick snippet review of issue number 2, but I was kind of disappointed. This issue kind of harkens back to the first issue with Moon Knight kind of acting as a PI and working together with the NYPD. I'm not going to go into too much detail into the story, but there's definitely, you know, it harkens back to that issue as opposed to what happened in issue number 2. So I'm kind of glad to see that, in this issue. I'm kind of curious to see where issue 4 goes. And that's a good thing now. You know, my curiosity is definitely piqued. The art by Declan Shalvey is very good. It's, you know, I've used the word dynamic a bunch of times on this show recently, but you know, it definitely applies in this case. It's Moon Knight is very well rendered. He's definitely a fun character to draw, it looks like, from what I can see. You know, similar to Batman, but in the sense that there's a moon shape that they're trying to evoke pretty much every time they draw him, you know, moving. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see the different ways that Shalvey interprets that, you know, what he looks like when he's moving from left to right and up and, you know, up and down the page. So I don't know if I would recommend this as strongly as I would Iron Fist number 2 to a new reader. I think this is definitely something that's a little bit more difficult to get into. I would have probably asked someone to pick up at least the first issue, because I don't think the second issue really has any impact on this one. But you definitely want to read the first issue to get an intro into the current status quo of Moon Knight, and then this issue kind of flows right, you know, right along after that. So you can read this. I also enjoyed She-Hulk number 4. Charles Soule, the hardest working lawyer that I know, I guess, because, you know, this guy has got a law practice and writes a bazillion comic books. This is actually a lot, you know, like, you know, take it from a practicing attorney. This issue is really fun to read just from that perspective. And Doom is actually written, Dr. Doom is actually written very, it's just very amusing. I don't know if the Doom purists would be very happy with this issue, but at the same time, because I know I have a good buddy, a longtime friend who is a Doom purist who, you know, if he had his ways, he, you know, he would speak very much like Dr. Doom. You know, Doom rules all, and some other things that Dr. Doom would say. I don't know if Dr. Doom purists would be very happy with this issue, but I enjoyed it. You know, you can see from the cover, Daredevil Matt Murdock does make a guest appearance in this issue. It's a nice cameo. It's kind of cool. It's like, you know, it's two lawyers, you know, it's kind of chit-chatting and trading ideas. So it's kind of a different look into She-Hulk's and Daredevil's world.
So have we gotten the courtroom drama yet in there, where they're in the courtroom yelling at each other in front of the judge, or is this all kind of behind the scenes politics and life story type stuff?
In terms of what, between Daredevil and She-Hulk, or
just She-Hulk in general? Like, has there been
some courtroom stuff? There's been some courtroom stuff, but it's nothing overly dramatic because, spoiler alert, the first few issues were about the son of Dr. Doom, Christoph, seeking asylum here in the United States, and the courtroom scenes were not very dramatic because the United States, you know, representing the people I forget what they're called now. It's not Immigration Naturalization Service. I guess it's Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. You know, they weren't exactly opposing Christoph Bernard's application for asylum. So, you know, they basically consented after the case was put on. So there wasn't a lot of courtroom drama. There was a lot more Dr. Doom-based drama. So we haven't gotten to, like, a full knockdown, drag-out courtroom battle yet. I think that's a little bit more Daredevil territory. But we'll see. I enjoyed it. I thought it was just a nice offbeat issue. I know, you know, shout out to Eclectic again. He's not a fan of Javier Pulido's art, but I think it definitely lends a lot of character to the book.
Well, the art is the one thing that just drives me away from this book. I just
really
can't get into it. Yeah.
Which book?
She-Hulk. Where they all look like Bratz. They look like Bratz dolls.
They really do.
It's not that bad. I actually enjoy it. You know, and I'm actually, you know, I'm a real stickler for art, and I think it's a nice offbeat look to, you know, a superhero book.
I guess we should also announce that Agent Carter is getting a series order for the fall.
More Haley Atwell is a good thing.
And as someone tweeted out that I've retweeted. So in the fall, we're going to have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Peggy Carter, Gotham, Constantine, The Flash, and Arrow. I'll look forward to. That's a lot of shows.
That is a lot of shows.
I like William Bruce West's idea that they shouldn't have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Peggy Carter, whatever the shows end up being called, on in the same season. they should, like, you know, one in the fall, one in the winter or spring or however they split it up. That would kind of make sense. He was wondering, can ABC handle two Marvel shows being aired at the same time?
Interesting. I mean, I hadn't given the programming aspect that much thought.
Well, isn't that part of their eventual goal, though, is to have all their Marvel properties as TV shows and movies across all the Disney platforms?
Yeah. But ABC Family still hasn't. I guess everything right now is on ABC.
Yeah, they want to get it on the free. Yeah, they want to get it on the free platform. They want to get that across all TV. So, all right.
But yeah.
Let's see if there's any other books I want to throw out there before we call it a night. We did all new X Factor. Iron Fist, Nine Original Sin. I got one last book. kind of a throwaway issue, Batman Superman number 10. The one thing of note that happens in this issue, it is the introduction to the new 52 post-Flashpoint, post-crisis, post-all, post-forever evil, post-all this business. It's the reintroduction of Ray Palmer, the Atom. That is him in the foreground of the cover. Kind of look weird.
And is that good or bad?
The story is a real throwaway story, but you know, if it serves as well, what's funny is that remember the old joke, what good is Aquaman if the story doesn't revolve around water? Right? So it's almost like, well, they concocted a story that involves shrinking so that they could put the Atom into it. You know, so that's kind of why he's there. So they, you know, they found a way to bring him in.
Well, you know, you do whatever it takes.
Yeah. So that's that. Anyone else got any books to throw out there before we do clicks of the week?
Look at my list. Nah, we mentioned everything I've read.
I mean, I read some other stuff, but nothing I really want to talk about that I care that much about. So.
Gotcha.
Did everyone list their clicks of the week?
No, I'm trying to determine mine right now. I'm kind of in between. What, you got yours already?
Mine is Cyclops.
You tweeted out already, right? I saw that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. Because I had a good time reading a lot of these books. You know, Cyclops number one is definitely up there. You know, for all my misgivings about the Original Sin limited series, I enjoyed reading that book. I enjoyed reading Futures End number one.
Well, I'm just going to go with Nailbiter because I absolutely love that book. And anything that can get that creepiness of a good horror story across in comics is definitely something we need more of.
Okay. You know what? Despite the fact that you guys have misgivings about the art, I'm throwing out She-Hulk number 4 as my pick of the week.
Oh, wow.
I just enjoyed reading it. It's a close call over Iron Fist number 2. I enjoyed She-Hulk number 4, so I am calling that my click of the week for this week.
All right.
There you go.
So then we're going to do this draft over email then for the next day or so? Is that the deal?
Yeah, or as long as it takes to finish up the round.
Should we do it on Twitter? So it can still be public. Everybody can see it unfold on Twitter.
Yeah, let's do it that way. That sounds fun.
All right.
And use the hashtag so we keep track of it.
CBC draft. Hashtag CBC draft.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's shorter.
All right, so CBC draft, and we're using the parameters that we set up in the email, right? Marvel, DC, Marvel first round, DC image second round. Yeah. Let me pull that up. just so that we can describe
Dark Horse Dynamite for the third round, right. Boom IDW for the fourth round, and then the fifth round is Wild Card. You pick anybody from any company.
You got it.
Yeah. And we're going to do it by ranking. ICV2 has the diamond sales and ranking for every month. So we'll start, I think the March numbers just came out, so we'll start with the April numbers next month, and we'll go over, you know, where they're ranked. The lower the score, the better. So if you're number one for the month, you got 1 point. If you're number 10 for the month, you get 10 points, so on and so forth. And I guess we'll just average at the end of the month, average each month.
Right.
Each person scores, and then after 6 months, whoever has the lowest score is the winner.
Right. We'll keep track of it month by month to see, you know, who's moving up and down.
Yeah. You can watch me rise to the top while the rest of you tumble away.
We'll see if Dirt's retail knowledge, experience, and you know, finger on the pulse of the retail customer is going to help him with this.
Yeah, it will.
Well, you know, the person that picks Batman apparently is going to have a nice big, you know, nice big lead right there.
Nice.
All righty.
Okay. As you see, we're starting to fade.
Yeah, right?
Getting close to bedtime, right?
So. Got it. So,
let's do the plugs. Follow me on Twitter at TimDOGG98 and at TheQuickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt.
That's me.
And at PopCultureNetwork.com.
That's me also.
Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And then once again, we'll be doing our draft online. Hashtag on Twitter, CBC Draft.
So there you go.
For that, the next couple of days. I want to thank everyone that tuned in live. Thanks to Dorkikas for tweeting with us and keeping us company.
Yes. Shout out to Dorkikas. Shout out to everyone that we shouted out this week. We're glad to help out and you know, support everyone out there.
Indeed, as I yawn.
Yeah.
So that good ending point. This is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.